This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And welcome. It's already February for those of you who are letting time pass and not paying attention. 1/12 of our way through 2008. Let's take a moment and make sure that the Lovingston 94.7 folks are out there. Be sure to call us up during the hour. 979-0919 1-877-WNRN Rocks. We'll be here for you as we talk today about non-profit organizations, how to make one, how to keep one going, the legal aspect of it, the academic aspect of it, and all that goes along. Mary Burkholz with us, president of Caring for Creatures out of Louvana. Professor Rob Patterson from the McIntyre School of Commerce here at UVA. Tim Sinatra, executive director from the Boys and Girls Club here in Charlottesville. Let's take a moment and let everybody know about Free Union Country School. They're having an open house on Wednesday, February 6th, from 9 a.m. until noon at the Free Union Country School. Dedicated teachers present a challenging academic curriculum designed to promote independent thinking and where parents are considered the partners. More information can be found at their phone or at freeunioncountryschool.org. All right, I have a little bit of work to finish from last week. So let me take a time for that before I move on to this week's program. I want to take a moment and apologize to the individuals out there in charge of the area school nutrition programs. I spent a lot of time attempting to have someone from an area school system be a guest on last week's show as we talked about nutrition and wellness. Because I wanted to learn a lot more about school nutrition decisions and the things that go along with that. And I think a lot of the listeners did as well. A lot of parents are out there listening. However, when I ranted about folks failing to take advantage of the community educational hour we were having, I should have been referring to the bureaucratic system that would not allow these people to join in our discussion or the system that at least slowed down the possibility. There are people at the other end of my verbal darts, and those folks working under the constraints of the system didn't deserve to be hit. Too often I don't attach a face to the negative comments I make, and this week I learned that not only is there a face, but feelings as well, and sometimes they belong to people I otherwise think highly about. So better control behind the microphone from Mr. Moore. And again, direct apologies to Christina Pitzenberger and Alicia Cost. I don't know if that does any good after the fact. It doesn't change the fact that the county and the city didn't have anyone here, but I don't believe that that was directly responsible of those two women. All right, on to this week's program, February 3rd, 2008. Let's introduce the guests that we have here. We'll start with ladies first. Mary Burkholz, how are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning, Rick?
I'm doing well. Mary, president of Caring for Creatures. Take 15, 20 seconds and tell us about Caring for Creatures.
Caring for Creatures is a nonprofit sanctuary for homeless, abandoned, neglected dogs and cats. We are located in Fluvanna County, and we're situated on 157 secluded acres. Our goal is to place these animals into loving and responsible homes, but if they're not adopted, we offer them a lifetime home at the sanctuary.
All right. Sounds it sounds very special. And I took a visit out there when I wanted you to be on the program, and it is a very nice place. And the care and the concern for the animals is apparent from the way the organization is set up and the people who are there.
Thank you. We agree. Very special place.
In the middle, Tim Sinatra. Tim, Executive Director, Boys and Girls Club, Charlottesville. Tim, I think a lot of people are familiar with the name, but not always exactly what goes on at the Boys and Girls Club.
Well, it's great to be here. And Boys and Girls Club's really what we call a positive place for kids where they can come and learn and grow and develop to their full potential. We have five units within the Central Virginia area. And youth really get an opportunity to come to the facility and experience five core areas of programming that really helps them develop for them to become positive, productive citizens and really give back to their community. We pride ourselves in really providing the most highest quality programs to youth at the lowest cost or no cost so that every child can have a safe, positive place where they can learn and grow. So we're really excited to be here and serve the kids in this local community.
All right. And then over in the corner, tucked away, much due to his long legs and being unable to sit too close, Professor Rob Patterson from University's McIntyre School of Commerce. And I said I would call you Rob sometimes, but in this case, we're calling you Professor. Professor Patterson, one of the things that you teach and have some background in is nonprofits. Fill us in a little bit about your expertise in this area.
Well, first of all, it's a super Sunday. Thanks for having us, and it's great to be here. Well, as far as the background, I have anywhere, I guess, from 7 to 8 years experience, depending on how you count it, as a volunteer or as a paid staff member of nonprofit organizations. And so with that background, I guess, coupled with some of the studies that I've done academically, that's where I sit, I guess, in this. And most recently, I've had experience as being associate executive director and chief of staff of a nonprofit in Washington, D.C.
All right, so those are our guests, the panel of guests for today on Super Sunday. By the way, I promise that we will finish in time for you to get home for the game, but you will miss some pregame experience.
Right.
All right, I'm curious. Let's start at the basics. And, Rob, we're going to start here with you for this one. I'm curious as to what are the legal qualifications of a nonprofit, because there's also tax-exempt. And I'm not sure if they are the same, if one is a small part of another, or how that works.
Sure. Just by starting off, the largest group, I guess, of nonprofits would be 501c3s, and that's a category that's given by the IRS through federal, you know, legislation. And the 501c3 is a charitable organization, and they often fit into general categories such as health, hospitals, education, human services being the largest, I guess, sector within that 501c3 designation. And it's basically where they are tax exempt, and those individuals who contribute to the charitable organizations, 501c3s, can deduct those donations from their own taxes.
Tim and Mary, I'm curious as to, are you tax-exempt nonprofits, or, you know, what are your organizations?
The Boys and Girls Clubs is tax-exempt under the 501c3, and we accept charitable contributions, and our goal that fits and qualifies us is that we're serving, we're a social service-type organization that's serving youth and families in the local community. So we're able to accept charitable contributions, and the donors are able to get a write-off for that in supporting our agency.
And Caring for Creatures is exactly the same. We're a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, and also are in a position to accept donations from the public. And we're organized as a animal welfare corporation or organization.
Professor, which organizations are not? I mean, why would you be, or how can you be a nonprofit but not be tax exempt?
As far as being a nonprofit that's not tax exempt, there are all kinds of designations. I believe there are 27 different 501c organizations.
It's definitely a government issue.
Right. And so some of those have more limitations. For example, groups like, since it is Super Sunday, the NFL is organized as a 501c6. Typically your Chamber of Commerce, your NFL, those are organizations that are nonprofit but have a few more restrictions. And I'll be truthful and honest with you. I don't know exactly what some of those restrictions are, but I know that they don't have some of the ability like a 501c3 would have, for example, to receive contributions and for any of those contributions or donations to be tax deductible.
Why
from
in the world
giver.
Would the NFL qualify for this?
Not sure.
I mean, because I think the majority of people listening would say, wait a minute, right. You're talking about 30, 32, you know, businesses.
Right.
They're talking about hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. I mean, how do they even come close to qualifying for any title of nonprofit?
I don't know the exact, I guess regulations in which they operate, but I just know that their classification is a 501c6, and not sure exactly what or how they got categorized into that particular segment or sector.
Mary, let me ask you, because one of the things that we want to talk about today is not just the definitions of nonprofits and how the nonprofit runs, but I want to talk about how you start a nonprofit, because Caring for Creatures is something that you started 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Can you tell
We're
me
celebrating
that upcoming 20, is 20 yeah, years?
This year.
So I'm assuming that you wanted to do so because of your love for animals.
Exactly. In my position, I think the seeds of starting Caring for Creatures probably started when I was a child, and we didn't have animals in our family, so I used to go around and ask neighbors with their dogs and knock on their doors and ask if I could take them for walks. So somewhere along the line, although I didn't realize it then, there was seeds being planted. In my teenage and young adult years, I volunteered for SPCA's humane societies, and it was through those experiences that I think my dream to create the Sanctuary of Caring for Creatures evolved and became more clear. Once that happened, certainly what I had to do was become clear for myself. What was I wanting to create? What service did I want to provide? What need did the sanctuary want to fill? Personally, I would say one of the greatest challenges was just coming face to face with my fear of quitting my well-paying job to follow my dream. So that was the first hurdle, and probably if I would have known at that time the other hurdles coming, I probably might have turned around and ran the other way. But certainly the desire to help animals kept me going. But from that point, I started a corporation, got an attorney to do some pro bono work, started the corporation, decided what I needed property-wise. It took us a year. Pardon me?
That's a lot. 150 acres?
It's a large piece of property, but my vision in the beginning was a place where, number one, I wouldn't be sitting on top of neighbors that might have a problem with barking dogs. I wanted an environment that would allow us to have the space to expand as we wanted to do that over our lifetime, and sort of a serene environment for not only the animals that would be in residence, but the humans who came to visit and work with them.
You mentioned a lot of the hurdles out there. I'm curious as to, okay, so you get an attorney, you figure out the basic start, you get an attorney, you buy your property. I would assume that there was the building of your structures before you could take anyone in, or at least before you got too big. But what are the, curious as to what are the paperwork hurdles, the steps that you had to overcome to actually legally and qualify for such, because there's people out there hopefully listening today who have that thought in mind that you had 20 years ago about, you know, I want to do And I've been involved in some various nonprofits. You know, there's an art gallery or two on the downtown mall. There's you know, some other organizations, and they can be just about anything, whether it's a group of teachers who want to teach others, and Boys and Girls Club. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of organizations forming in someone's head, and I'm curious as to what, other than getting the legal work done and signing off on the papers, what other hurdles were there for you?
Well, first of all, I did want Caring for Creatures to have the 501c3 designation, so it was necessary for me to find out from the IRS how I go about doing that. And there's forms that you have to complete, and I did that. I'm thinking gratefully that 20 years ago, it's maybe not as complicated as it is now. But I think that once I accomplished filling out the, and it was extensive paperwork with the IRS, submitted that, the IRS, I believe, and Rob, you'll have to correct me if that's all changed now, but I believe there's a 3-year period that the IRS gave us in the beginning to get situated. As a public charity, you're required to have a certain percentage of your revenue or gifts coming from a wide number of people, a large number of people.
I would assume that that's so that it's not one person sort of using the
Right.
Using the title
of nonprofit
to save their money.
Yeah, exactly.
And not be taxed.
Right.
Rob, is it more difficult now than it was then?
I don't know about that. I don't believe so. It may be more difficult on the paperwork side, but for example, if you look at 2003, there were about 823,000 of these groups across the United States, and we're well over a million with 501c3s today. And I believe in 2003, for example, you had $1.4 million of all 501c category nonprofits, and it's well above that today. So you might imagine that most of those are in the most populated states in America, New York, Texas, Florida, California. That's where the majority are. Of course, there are a lot in Washington, D.C., leading up to maybe something you might want to talk about in the future is the lobbying efforts of these groups and how they influence politics. And, of course, a number of those are in Washington, D.C., especially those that are called associations.
All right, Mayor, so you get your IRS issues taken care of.
Right.
But it doesn't stop there.
Oh, gosh, no. Everything about, in my opinion, a nonprofit is record-keeping, but the biggest challenge or obstacle that you have, or at least what I experienced, is gaining support. You need supporters. You need donors to fund your project and help you do the services that you want to provide. I would say that one of the things that I probably didn't focus on really well was that a lot of individuals may be wary of donating to a very new organization. There's no track record. There's no success record to report. You're just here. You're new. And most donors are wanting to be very careful about where they put their money. And so I found that challenge as one that maybe I had not anticipated. Of course, I was excited about what we were doing, but we didn't have a track record. So educating and getting the word out about who you are, what you do, and being able to build a solid base takes some time. And our early years were, I was slow procession, I would say, of gaining supporters.
11:19 here on the Wake Up Call. We're talking about nonprofit organizations, the how-tos, the ways they're currently run, some of the academic and legal aspects of such. That was Mary Burkholz from Pluvanna's Caring for Creatures, a nonprofit organization that she personally started from scratch. Professor Rob Patterson here from the McIntyre School of Commerce. I haven't allowed Tim Sinatra to say much yet, but we're going to do that right after the break because I want to know about how a regional or national organization, he's from the Boys and Girls Club here in Charlottesville, continues all these prospects. Dial us up if you have questions or comments, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's toll free. We do have Michael out there in the lobby today to patch you through. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today. Highs 55 to 60. A little warmer in Lynchburg and Richmond. Mostly cloudy tonight. 30 to 35 with a 20% chance of rain and freezing rain in the valley. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. 50% chance of rain. Highs 45 to 50. Some clouds and a little warmer in Richmond. Right now it's clear most of the listening area. 42 in the valley, 52 in Lynchburg, 49 in Richmond, 45 in Charlottesville, and I heard it's almost 50 in Super Bowl, Arizona.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for being here with us today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And we also want to thank folks who listen to this program and support the radio station. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. And we want to thank listeners like Gary Grant and Roy Huta, Brenda Clement Jones, all who supported us in the fall fund drive, and also because of underwriters like Hamilton's and Central Virginia Battery. So stay tuned, tell a friend about the Wake Up Call and everything we do, and be here this spring at the end of March when we have the spring fundraiser. All right, back in action, Tim Sinatra, Professor Rob Patterson, Mary Burkholz. All right, Michael, I don't know if I can read this. UGN, National Change in Policy. What does UGN stand for? All right, I'll read this. Someone who didn't want to come on air, and we'll see if we can understand it enough to comment on it. He wants Rob to comment on UGN, National Change in Policy, but how they fund nonprofits. Is there still enough money to go around? All right, Rob's shaking my head. Caller, you got to call back and tell us what the heck UGN is. Do you know?
I don't know that acronym.
All right. Sorry, caller. Dial up. You're welcome to come on air if you'd like. You don't have to come on air if you just want to pass the question through. But, you know, remember that Michael is really, really smart, and he didn't get that. And I'm mostly stupid after 43 years of killing brain cells. So don't expect me to understand them. All right. Tim, we're talking about how to build an organization from scratch, and Mary's talking about getting funding, finding property, getting support from people when you're new. Do these problems change when you're part of a national organization who already has a name? If you wanted to go into a new place, if Boys and Girls Club of Charlottesville wants to redo the building that you're in or find a new building that's more modern and updated, are these issues still going to be there for you?
Yeah, they will. They're very similar. The difference is you have a kind of a backbone from a national organization that can help you with best practices and give you support and guidance to get up and running. It's much more difficult if you don't have that support. But when you have that, you can really maximize your effectiveness and be efficient in your startup, and also in how you establish the foundation for your organization is important. I think one of the most important things when we start up a new club that comes under our Central Virginia umbrella is we really look at the first 3 years. We try to have that community develop a board of directors or a support group. We'll have them also raise the first 3 years of operating. Also have an agreement so that we can work effectively together, and also try to get some type of facility that the community will donate or rent free. Because the key in any nonprofit in your first 3 years, like any business, it's gonna succeed or it's gonna fail. And we want to set it up that we can focus on the mission, especially in the first 3 years, and have enough time because we've raised the first 3 years of revenue in order to focus specifically on the program, giving us enough time to generate individual donors and possibly special events to support the organization so we can continue fulfilling the mission.
Does the Boys and Girls Club receive any federal or state or, you know, government funding?
I would say in our budget, which is $1.3 million, we receive maybe 6% funding. A lot of people, that's a good question. A lot of people feel that Boys and Girls Club is actually receiving taxes, which is false. We raise every dollar, and about 85 to 90% of the funds we raise come from individual donors. So we really don't receive any support other than about 6% from the federal government or local government, and we're very appreciative of it. But the majority of the money we raise definitely comes from the individual donors and the local communities.
That's Tim Sinatra. He's the executive director of the Charlottesville chapter of the Boys and Girls Club. Rob Patterson from the McIntyre School of Commerce. Mary Burkholz, the president and, I guess, initial starter of Caring for Creatures in Louvain as we talk about nonprofits. Tim, I'm curious. I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this word properly. It's de-evolution or just devolution, which I read somewhere in doing some research for today's show as the loss of government funds. And I'm curious as to if that has any effect on you, on your organization, on the chapter, and the, I guess, the national organization of Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah, I think nationally it has a little bit of an effect, but I can say locally what happens, let me speak locally first, is we really have a solid strategy of avoiding really having a lot of grant-heavy funding. Because what happens is when a grant's pulled away, do you close a club if you're depending fully on grants? And so we try to diversify our revenues. So if one revenue stream starts to dry up or disappears, we can still move forward and continue the same pace of our program and quality, being able to do that. But I know nationally there are significant federal dollars. I think last year $85 million came to Boys and Girls Club of America. We didn't see much, but I think maybe 10,000 of it coming here, and there's 4,000 clubs across America, organizations of Boys and Girls Clubs, so it can be split up to grow clubs. But when that does happen, if your club happened to rely heavily on it, it can really affect or even close your organization. So you have to be very careful on having just that one major stream of funding coming from the government or any granting agency.
And I guess it's really not much different than losing a large donor, is it? I mean, if you have a large donor who, you know, is kind enough to provide for you on a yearly basis and they, for whatever reason, they pass on, they, you know, have a family member who becomes ill and so their money, instead of going to Boys and Girls Club, goes to this, you know, disease research center, for whatever reason, that affects you in a similar manner.
Exactly. And that's why you try to really diversify your revenues. You don't want any one large chunk of the funding that supports your organization come from one source. Because if that dries up, if something happens with that individual donor and they move in a new direction for whatever it might cause, it could really impact the quality and you achieving your mission. So really focusing on trying to look at many different sources and effectively raising that money so if something does change, you're still able to move forward.
Rob, Professor Patterson, I'm curious as to sort of what the academic studies might be on this. You know, you said that you've been on various, been involved with organizations, been on some boards. I'm assuming that some of the classwork at the McIntyre School involves this. What is it, devolution? Is that the proper pronunciation of the word, the loss of government funds?
Devolution, de-evolution, right.
What's the conversation about from an academic standpoint?
Well, not so much from an academic standpoint, but if I could just share, I guess, an anecdote from my own personal experience would be in some economic downturns, for example, education nonprofits sometimes actually benefit. Research has shown that when the economy slips a little bit, people tend to become students. They go back to school, in particular higher education, I'm thinking of, because those are the groups that I work for. And for example, the last group that I work for in Washington, they collected membership dues or what we call sustaining fees from individual institutions that were accredited by the group. And those revenues were based on us per student enrollments in the institutions. And so the sustaining fees were, if you will, tailored to how many students were at a particular institution, and that would constitute then the return that would come back to our organization. One of the things, too, that I wanted to point out that both Mary and Tim have pointed to were the notion of boards and the notion of having good legal counsel. We found that having good legal counsel, both from, you know, a start of a new initiative or, of course, interpreting many of the regulations that 501c3s have to, you know, come under, you really get sage advice from either a general counsel or an outside counsel. And then, of course, the care and feeding of a board of directors is really important in the nonprofit sector. And again, I'm talking from the 501c3 perspective. But if you have a good board and you have great volunteers, then, you know, as Mary and Tim can attest, either when you're starting an organization or you're trying to keep your momentum going, they are key stakeholders in what it is that you're doing.
All right, dial us up. Questions, comments are allowed. 979-0919-1877 WNRN Rocks. Let's take a moment and thank the folks at 45fix.com. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. I'm curious, Rob, you brought it up. Mary and Tim, I would assume that you deal with it regularly, which is, how are the nonprofits monitored and regulated? Mary, let's start with you. What do you see on a yearly basis? Does somebody come visit you, come out to Caring for Creatures and come out to, I guess for lack of a better word, the farm at, in Fluvanna? Are you just supposed to show up with your accountant or your lawyer and your, you know, trunk full of papers and set them on the table for people to go over? How does that work?
We file what's called a Form 990. It's a tax return, if you will. In the earlier years, again, when our revenues were not as high, and I'm thinking it was $25,000 or below, you're not required to file, or it's a short form. And thankfully, since we've proceeded beyond that, we file a full Form 990. And there, although I personally don't do it, but what's required, you have to detail your program services, where your money goes, what the various expenses are, how the dollars are spent, who's on the board, oh, there's a dog looking in the window. Sorry. Who's on the board? And this gets filed on a yearly basis. It's a public document. Your donors can view this, with a few exceptions of, I think there's a part of it that is kept private to protect identities of certain donors. But for the most part, this is a public document. You're required to file this every year. We also move through with regular audits, professional audits. And so our financial statements are audited as well.
And Tim, being, I guess, with the Charlottesville chapter of Boys and Girls Club, just being one of how many?
We're one of, well, locally, we're one of 5 units, but of nationally, 4,000.
So do you have to do anything on your end as the executive director, or are you just, you know, email the file to the folks at the national office and let them handle it?
No, there's a pretty extensive oversight by the national organization, along with our own commitment here. But we also, as Mary said, we produce a 990. We have an audit done by an independent auditor. We do what's called a standards of organizational effectiveness, where we basically get rated as an organization from the national standards of whether we're being effective or not, and we have to have a certain rating to maintain our charter. There's charter requirements that the national organization, which is based on a lot of the IRS requirements and so on, that we maintain in order to keep the brand of the Boys and Girls Club. Also, we have a commitment to quality, which actually rates our programs every year on how we are doing and so on. And just internally, the metrics we create to report to our board and constituents to maintain effectiveness and accountability along with transparency is really important. So there are a lot from a national organization, but it's really just kind of safety efforts to maintain a strong organization and make sure you're moving forward with all the requirements.
Hey, Rob, can nonprofits lobby politically? I mean, you mentioned the ones in D.C., but
right.
They fall into a different number, right? They're not 501(k)s or...
No, a lot of the groups in Washington are 501(c)(3)s, and it's kind of a myth that you cannot lobby. But there are federal tests, if you will, and they're called either the substantial test or the expenditure test. The substantial test is basically saying that you can go out and lobby, but it can't be a substantial part of what it is that your organization does. And the magic number, if you will, is trying to stay at 5 or under 5%, I guess, of your annual budget would be going toward any kind of lobbying, direct or indirect lobbying activity. So it is somewhat of a, again, of a myth that you cannot lobby, but it cannot be a substantial part of what it is that you do. Of course, many of the groups are in Washington, D.C., because they may not be overtly lobbying, but they are influencing public policy, if you will. One of the things, if I could pick up just very quickly, the group that I was part of, we were heavily regulated by the U.S. Department of Education because the institutions that we accredited had students that were taking federal monies in the Title IV, either Pell Grants or loans, that sort of thing. And so we were actually, much like Tim was talking about, regulated through a self-study process. Every 5 years, we had to go before the National Advisory Committee on Institutional Quality and Integrity. That's a long acronym, isn't it? And every 5 years, we had to submit a self-study to them. And this is a council or commission that's put together by the U.S. Department of Education. And so it has many of the quality control or quality assurance mechanisms that Tim was talking about and Mary was talking about as well in terms of the IRS. So oftentimes, I guess the main point I'm trying to make is that there are layered agencies that you have to placate in terms of the regulation.
11:38 on the wake-up call, Professor Rob Patterson from the McIntyre School of Commerce, Tim Sinatra, Executive Director of Boys and Girls Club here in Charlottesville, Mary Burkholz, President and Founder, but also Lead Professor at Caring for Creatures in Fluvanna. Rob was telling me beforehand, don't be calling me professor, so we'll spread it around and everybody can be professor and we'll make you more comfortable with that title. I'm curious, and whoever wants to answer this, jump right in. By the way, 979-0919, 1-877, WNRN Rocks. Two questions, somewhat related. Percentage of funds that you can put back into the business, because I'm assuming it's not all of them, because what's the limit on the dollars that can go towards administrative pay? Anybody know? Mary, I'm assuming that you take home some personal for the work that you do because you oversee the entire place. You have many hats that you wear there.
Exactly.
I didn't see your gold Rolls Royce when we pulled up.
I was hiding that
one. Tim, I'm assuming that you take home some pay. This is not a volunteer job. This is a paid job at Boys and Girls. So does anybody know the answer of percentage of pay that can go towards administration? Because that's come up in the past for other businesses, mm-hmm. right, or other organizations. Was it Salvation Army or Red Cross or somebody who, where, you know, out of my dollar, 33 cents was going to pay for, you know, some very high CEO person. I'm curious as to if that comes up when people ask for donations, if you know what the rules are.
From my perspective, and I may quote that percentage wrong, and Rob may need to correct me on it, but it's in the 20 or low 20s or under that, just under that. Most smaller nonprofits, quite typically their salaries or hourly pay is quite low. That's because right. They tend to throw all of their money into their service programs. And in fact, sometimes that's what makes it more challenging to find dedicated and committed personnel to work with you. Sometimes you can't compete with the profit organizations when it comes to salaries and benefits, but, I know at Caring for Creatures, the percentage is well within what is expected, and probably many times under that.
And in 2006, the National Council of Nonprofit Associations reported that 66% of all 501c3s had revenue under $25,000. So most of the organizations are fairly small. So having those kind of astronomical salaries for the executive team, whether it's executive director or anybody below that at a director level, is probably not going to happen. But obviously, from a PR standpoint, you're talking about the Salvation Army and other groups like that. And I don't know that story per se, but it can become a personal relations problem if the salary does not, I guess it becomes too large where people think that that's not reasonable. And those who are donating do ask the hard questions about how much of my dollar is going toward administrative costs and how much are actually going to the people who need.
Right. I would think that's a regular question for people. And by
Absolutely.
The way, I don't want the Salvation Army calling me up. I don't know that that's who that was or not, but it seems to me that it was 3 or 4 years ago that an organization that people went, wow, really? I would never have expected that from them, was in the news for such a purpose. Tim?
Yeah, I would say I've heard best practices on administrative fee anywhere from 12 to 17%, 25 and above, 25 and below is, usually a range that you'll see from certain agencies requesting. Some of the best practice kind of website, like Charity Navigator and so on, try to look for organizations that are in that 17% range, and any lower than that is great. A lot of it has to do, though, I think, when you're looking at an organization, is a lot of organizations that might be funded by federal dollars coming through and so on, and if you have a staple of money that's right there for you, that's great, and you can have a low percentage of administrative costs because you're not having to go out and raise every dollar, whereas organizations that don't depend on that might have a higher administrative fee, and as they become more efficient, more effective, it'll drop down. So I think there's an evolution of as they grow as an organization to lower that cost.
Because, Rob, aren't there... there are internet organizations, and probably not just the internet, who that is what they do, is they look at nonprofit organizations, especially the larger ones, to see how much of their money is being spent on administration costs.
Right. I think, as many sectors are, the nonprofit sector is under the microscope. And the total assets, just to give you a sense, in 2006, again, from the report from National Council of Nonprofit Associations, reported that total assets of nonprofits was $1.76 trillion. The economic, the economic impact of nonprofits is maybe larger than what people might think. Expenditures in that same time frame was $945 billion. This is, again, from a report in 2006 from National Council of Nonprofit Associations. And I believe those are 2003 numbers because that was the most recent data that they had, but they reported it in 2006. So I think you get a sense of the scope of the impact that nonprofit sector has in the U.S. economy.
All right, Professor Rob Patterson from the McIntyre School of Commerce here at UVA. Tim Sinatra, Executive Director of Charlottesville Area Boys and Girls Club. And Mary Burkholz, President and Founder, Caring for Creatures in Fluvanna.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, an unthinkable family tragedy. A mother mistakenly leaving her son in the car led to a trial played out in public this week. The mother speaks to The Hook. And waste not, want not, many local builders toss useful materials into the dumpster, but at least one contractor is salvaging many of these items and making some headway to save the planet. The Hook, reminding you that all fun starts with a reading of The Hook. And Five Guys Burgers and Fries is out there. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Berkshire Shopping Center, in the Hollymead Town Center, and on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's fiveguys.com. And don't be going anywhere, because at noon, Drew Thompson is here for Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing and NRN speak, that means the time's gone by. And on NRN, that means late 80s through mid-90s alternative. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, let's see. We got a call. Let me push all my buttons and your buttons and get it back up like we need. Zephyr from Lovingston. Mary, what did you do for a living before caring for creatures? And then Tim, same question. All right, Mary.
Before caring for creatures, I had various positions in the business world. I worked for a stock brokerage company for many years. I managed a real estate apartment complex for a number of years. And just prior to the job I quit to begin searching for my dream, I worked for a real estate developer up in Alexandria, Virginia.
And I was, you know, when I was, I remember when I was in high school and I thought, they talked about careers and what are you going to do for your career? And I thought, if I have to work at a job for 40 hours a week plus, I better do something I like. Otherwise, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life. And so I've been doing this pretty much for 19 years now with the Boys and Girls Club and enjoyed every bit of it.
All right, we got another call that appears to be coming in. We'll give that a second or two. Rob, throw this back at you. You mentioned the NFL early on,
right,
as a program or an organization we would all think to be quite, you know, the commercial group, and saying that they are somehow factored themselves into being a nonprofit. Are there any that flip that we would assume to be nonprofits that are not? Like I mentioned Salvation Army in my previous, you know, example, mm-hmm. whether it was accurate or not.
Well, the Salvation Army is a 501c3 along with Habitat for Humanity, Goodwill Industries, the fact that, you know, I assume they have the proper title Goodwill Industries still. Many of us call it Goodwill. But the fact that it is industry sometimes may confuse people. Oh, is that for-profit? Is it non-profit? But they are organized as a 501c3, I believe. United Way, these are some of the big names. And then those that have a few more restrictions in terms of donors and their contributions being written off at the end of the tax year, 501c4s are groups like ARP or the National Rifle Association, Christian Coalition. These are groups that are organized as nonprofits, but those people who actually donate to the groups cannot write those off for their tax purposes.
I'm curious. We've mentioned a couple issues and ongoing concerns, fundraising being one of them. I'd like you to talk a little bit about fundraising as an ongoing concern, but first, volunteers and personnel, because it seems to me that that would be quite the issue that needs incredible amount of effort to make that go. Because, I mean, I guess that there are a handful of people at Boys and Girls Club, at Caring for Creatures, who do get paid, but they get paid a minimal amount so that most of the money goes back towards the function of the organization itself. How do you make that work for you in finding people? Tim, you want to start?
Sure. You know, locally we have 28 staff, 12 of them are full-time. And, you know, when you look at the nonprofit environment, you have a lot of underpaid, you know, great people working for you. There's an increasing workload always creeping up and extended hours. And the key is retention, because every time you lose somebody, you actually, it's a step back. It's very costly to the organization. It can hurt the morale. And so you've got to find a solution. And how do you deal with some of those big challenges, personnel? One of the things locally that I've found just from my experience and working in nonprofits for 19 years is, A, there's got to be a sense of flexibility with your staff. They could work 100 hours a week and not blink, and they're so passionate to their cause, they'll do it, but it'll burn them out, and eventually they'll quit. So you gotta be flexible with them and kind of encourage them to spend time with their families and so on. We give out a lot of appreciation days when we see people working just more hours than they should. We just hand them out as luxury. One of the things, cross-training a lot of our staff, even if there's nobody moving and there's not a ladder to climb, we cross-train them so they have the potential to see what it's like on the other end and learn to grow with that. And the last thing is really supporting them and giving them a sense of ownership of what they do in the organization. And when people feel they own it, they're willing to stick through the tough times because they take it personally. So when you factor those things in, it really helps out. But it is a challenge keeping up personnel in a nonprofit environment.
And Mary, I mean, we're talking about a smaller organization, a smaller business. But to me, that just makes it more difficult. While you would need as many people, at least on a local level, I'm assuming, but I would think that that you have so many more hats to wear.
Exactly.
And you know, we're in the middle of Charlottesville, right, Tim? Mm-hmm. So you've got a larger base to draw from that could walk or bike or take the bus or whatever to get there. And Mary, I've been to your place,
yeah.
And I think we got lost three times trying to get there, and I have a pretty good sense of direction.
Yeah, you are exactly right. It's one of our greatest challenges, and I feel that Caring for Creatures is blessed to have a very unbelievably committed and dedicated core staff. It is small. We carry about 12 individuals who are on a payroll. The balance of the work is supported through volunteers, and many small nonprofits and us included live or die with volunteers. I mean, they're critical to ongoing success. And I mean, what we have found in our area in Flavanna over 20 years has grown hugely. So the base of population has increased, which then allows us to draw from that as well. But we have numbers of retired individuals who have time on their hands and a lot of expertise and experience in the world. And we are grateful to have numbers of those people that step in. They help out with fundraising. You know, the weird thing, when you have a small staff, people do get sick and they can't come. So everybody, I don't care what hat you're wearing on that day, you put the hat of animal care on, including myself. And our volunteers have stepped up to make that possible. And organizations really need to cultivate and appreciate every person who donates their time and expertise.
Phil, I mean, it's hard. Anyone who lives in this area, Charlottesville, Albemarle, and the other counties surrounding us now, whether you work, whether you own the business, unemployment rate is painfully low. If you're looking for a job, you can find 50 businesses that have a help wanted sign up.
Yep.
They may not all be the number one thing that pay $75,000 for you to come in and sit down all day. If you own the business, it's very tough for you to find the person who fits in with your team that you're looking for. So I would think that finding the right people when you I don't know. I'm curious as to how you advertise to find a volunteer. Or do the volunteers come to you?
Some of it's word of mouth. You get individuals who do come out. They have a positive experience. Homeless animals or animal welfare in general is relates most to very many people. I mean, most people have some connection to an animal or care about what happens to them. So they're seeking out places, and word of mouth is huge for us. We use, for staffing purposes, we use local newspapers, passing the word, putting up flyers in order to find staff. And the travel aspect, we need to find local people, because it's not logical for someone in Charlottesville, perhaps, to take a paying position in Fluvanna with gas prices and what have you now. So it is one of the most day-to-day challenging things we work with.
All right, let's take advantage of this time at this topic for the two of you to toss out some information on how people who've been listening during the hour can come volunteer. How do they do that? Where do they call or stop by or whatever?
Sure. If anyone's interested in working with youth and really developing their full potential with the Boys and Girls Club, you can always call our main office at 977-2001 or go to our website at bgclubseville.org, and you'll find information on how you can get involved and volunteer.
All right. One more time.
That's phone number is 977-2001 or bgclubseville.org.
All right, Mary?
For Caring for Creatures, you can visit our website, www.caringforcreatures.org. We have a lot of volunteer opportunities listed there. You may also call our main office at 434-842-2404. And there's an application process, and we offer a once-a-month orientation program to get volunteers started and trained.
And just to point out that if anyone is interested in the possibility of getting a pet, that the Caring for Creatures website
yes.
is the coolest one of any that I've seen, because there are literally, there's got to be 100 pictures of the different pets with a name and a brief explanation about the animal and, you know, if it works well with children or gets along great with cats or that kind of thing. That was a really nice website as well. 11:57 here on the Wake Up Call. You are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And Blue Ridge Mountain Sports was here for us today. They have the gear for keeping you warm outside on the way to work or class or on the trail. The Blue Ridge staff can recommend the hat, pair of gloves, or jacket, including the Windstopper fleece from the North Face that lets you enjoy the outdoors anytime. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, or at brms.com. Rob, I'm going to toss this one to you. Rob Patterson, McIntyre School of Commerce. You were listening to Mary Burkholz, president of Caring for Creatures, and Tim Sinatra, executive director for the Boys and Girls Club in Charlottesville. Rob, I guess the assumption is that a nonprofit cannot make a profit, but I read that that was not true. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. You can make a profit, and that is kind of a, I guess, a misnomer, and that the monies can go back into the organization. And the, I guess the distinction is it can't really go back to any kind of shareholder, or it can't go to the people who run either the board or the executive staff. But it does cycle through. And so they are, in a sense, businesses in the fact that they are trying for revenues. The revenue helps the health of the organization. It helps to sustain the mission, as Tim referred to earlier. So there's no doubt that these organizations are in the business, if you will, of trying to make sure that they're there the next year and the next year and into the future.
All right. Tim and Mary, as folks who are running these nonprofits, I'd like you to give one word or one phrase to those listening who are giving this consideration, something that they need to keep in mind as they take their steps forward.
I think I'd say there's a lot of challenges in moving forward with a nonprofit. Just don't give up. Find a way to win, and it'll work out. It's worth it.
Mary?
I'd say you're going to face a lot of fears, a lot of obstacles. Don't let them stop you. Just keep going in spite of it, and know which way you're going.
All right. Thanks to everyone for coming in on Super Bowl Sunday.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Go home. By the way, Rob, you're very into this. Who are you rooting for?
Giants.
Giants, what's the score?
Ooh. 24-21.
Ooh, all right. I'll take your $10 bet, by the way. Oh, wait, I can't bet on air, can I? That's an FCC regulation violation, I have no doubt. All right, next week, Professor Pete Ronayne in here to talk about Super Tuesday and the primary voting after the fact. Everyone have a great Sunday.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.